16 Minutes of Care is a podcast based on the CARE principles, a strategic framework that reveals how brands create impact by caring and, as a result, grow their business. In each episode, Isabel welcomes a company executive who explains how CARE has helped their business grow successfully and sustainably.
Group Nao is an innovative strategic agency that creates strategies that inspire movement and define purpose. They are a group of experts in policy design, strategic communication, and they all work in a collaborative model. I'm very happy to meet my Danish counterpart, as I believe we have a lot in common. Please welcome Peter Reumer Hansen. He's the co-founder of Group Nao. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I'm very happy to have you here as well. Could you explain Group Nao, the name? Where does it come from?
Well, it comes from Mandarin. It's a Chinese word, and it really means brain or knowledge and thinking. But it has different meanings. If you say Renao, it's more like a rowdy place, a noisy place with a vibe, working out loud, and that's what we like to do. So we discussed all these meetings. It can also be internet slang for an impatient moment, for instance. And we think that's very much us. So we just settled for that name among other options.
Okay, interesting. I think curiosity, ambition, but also being impatient, that's at least three things we have in common. Do you think it's good attitudes to transform companies and organizations?
I think for me, curiosity is a fuel, for me personally, but also for our company. And I believe for much innovation and strategizing. This curiosity is just sort of the key factor. It's what we look for when we hire, and it drives me personally in everything we do. And personally, I get a little frustrated if I think I've uncovered everything. And of course, you can always learn, but I really enjoy working with new things, walking into rooms where I don't know the dynamics and patterns and stuff. And this curiosity we share in Group Nao. And which is also why we are a mix of disciplines. Some are commercial educated like me, or university, political science, anthropology. So we are a mix of people.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. You mainly work for tourism and tourist organizations all over the globe.
We work for cities, nations, governments, tourist organizations called DMOs, destination management or marketing organizations. We also work with real estate developers, real estate companies. So that can be also transforming old post-industrial buildings and estates into new purposes and becoming touristic places.
And all of that in general takes a lot of time. How does that match with your not so good at being patient with things?
It does take a lot of time, and often it requires selling hours, but we also do sort of wider programs where we have multi-clients cities coming along. So we can have maybe 20 or 40 cities in one project, which is just fantastic because we think we are talking to everyone at once and that we are learning from everyone at once. So it's a very efficient way of letting go of your curiosity.
That's nice. I invited you for many reasons, but one of the reasons is the collaborative model in which you work, because the CARE principles, the C of CARE, stands for collaboration. I'm a strong believer that we will need to collaborate if we want to find solutions for the challenges that we see. How important is it for you, that collaborative model?
It's very important for us as a firm, and I think I realized this maybe about 20 years ago, when I started working for the DMO in Copenhagen, wonderful Copenhagen. And that was really a network organization. We had more than 400 members. And it was the cruise industry and the hotel industry, the cultural sector, they're all under one roof and in various compartments and networks and memberships. And so it was like having all your partners walking around in your physical office almost every day. And we did all kinds of projects in Copenhagen. And so it's just a landscape of stakeholders, I guess, and partners. And the only way we could achieve anything as an organization was organizing this landscape into collaborations and projects. And later I realized that that was also really important doing that internationally. So Copenhagen, we weren't just working as Copenhagen. Sometimes we're working as Scandinavian capitals or European cities or, you know, going to China with other cities from Europe, Hamburg, for instance. So it's very much about forming strategic alliances. And for me personally, it's been my motto in my career is that you're never better than the ones you work with. And this motto keeps me just a little humble. But it also teaches me to work with the best, mm-hmm. because that's where you find inspiration, that's where you learn. So I think this idea that you, if you want to achieve something, if you want to set up a new initiative or project, think who will be the best partners for this, mm-hmm. because you're never better than the ones you work with. And that's how it goes.
I totally agree, but in reality we see that collaboration is not always that easy. Companies used to be like, oh, this is my secret, this is my way of working, I won't share it. There's very often egos in the way, specifically when you work with creative partners, no, it's our idea, or the not invented here syndrome. What are for you the biggest hurdles in collaboration?
I think when you've been director of business development in an organization that are, that is open and sort of in the middle of the game, you after a while you start realizing all the barriers to innovation and to development. And I have some learnings, key learnings. One of them is never wait. You don't have to wait for the skeptics. You know, you don't have to wait for the critics and for the ones who are slow to decide. Just go.
The handbrakes, like we used to call.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Don't do that. Just move. And sometimes you have to bulldoze a little bit. So, and that for me is an important learning. Secondly, you have to be respectful and humble, of course, in collaborations, and be very clear about the roles, defining what is your role, what is my role, and what can we do together. And also, that requires being clear on the goals. What can we achieve together? We are a success when this happens or when we arrive to that point. Those things are extremely important.
Interesting. But it's also interesting that you say that don't be bothered with the handbrakes, you know, just move on.
Yeah.
I would like to talk about Care for the Planet, which is the my book that I've written. It's all about taking care of people and the planet, or the planet. It really depends on the focus you have as an organization. Mm. And I would like also to zoom in the activities that you do in tourism. If we look at tourism, there's a lot of different studies, but I would say about 8% of global carbon emissions come directly and indirectly from tourism. It's of course, it's CO2 emissions when you travel. It's of course all the little things that you buy, the souvenirs, also the places where you stay. How can we make tourism sustainable, or is that just not possible?
It's going to be a yes and no. I'm sorry. It's really complex. I think in many ways you can also defining sustainability. What do we mean? Are we talking about climate, local environment, nature, culture, social resources? And also economic growth, which is also important in a world that we live in. So I think that's one complexity. The other one is more layered. Are we talking local or global environment, for instance? So if we start from the top, aviation, flying, it's really bad for the climate. And I'm very pessimistic. I know there's a lot of stuff going on. Talking about sustainable airline fuel, innovation is going to save us and stuff. But speaking today, sustainable airline fuels, biofuels, it's 0.1%. 0.1%. And it's going to take at least a decade just to grow it into a niche in the market. You can mix it up to 50%, but it also has in the fuel tanks. But it's also really, it does take emission to produce and stuff like that. So,
It's not the quick fix.
Still, I think aviation is important for us to communicate and have relations, to trade, to interact as a world community, all of that. So we have to fly, but we have to fly less. We have to fly more sustainable in every way we can.
Flying less is interesting. Do you think that flights should get more expensive?
So in some ways, yes. I think that I'm a big believer in green taxes, also on aviation, passenger taxes on cruises, even bed taxes on tourists. Because I think you can help finance the green transition doing that way. I think you have to fence it, make it very clear how we can help as consumers. And I think the vast evidence I've seen in this matter is that people are actually happy to pay if they know there is a greater meaning, that we are all caring for the planet or for the local community when we pay our tourism taxes.
Very often, like for instance, I flew here. I often get the question, how can you talk about care for people and planet and then still fly? Mm. Aren't you ashamed to fly? So I'm starting to get those questions. I compensate my flying by buying the trees and planting trees, which I do realize it's not the real solution. You're also flying a lot for your work because you're working on a global level. How do you compensate, or what do you do? Are there already solutions?
It's very much the same. We get that question too. I'm not ashamed. It's not in my nature, but I'm aware that it's a bad thing. And I think that we should limit as much as we can, and we do. And also, we also buy offsets when we travel as much as we can. And we try to take the train or take the car, you know, if we are in the neighborhood and stuff. So, and that's the only thing we can do right now as an international company. Mm-hmm. Also, I think it's not just us, it's the whole business. And it's I see big companies now having internal carbon credit accountancy, like a company like Microsoft, for instance. You can only have your budget, your carbon budget, allows you to travel only so much when you are employed with Microsoft, for instance. Mm-hmm. And I think that's super, super cool. Mm-hmm. And the more we, our firm and everyone else, can spread that knowledge, you can spread that awareness of these programs and mechanisms, I think maybe we can at least suppress some of the flight traffic. Yeah,
exactly. Mm. There's, of course, if travel gets more expensive and we pay taxes on it or we compensate or whatever, it's not for everyone anymore.
No.
Not everybody can afford it.
But that also makes me a little sad, this inequality, economic inequality in the green transition. Mm-hmm. We have to be very aware that, you know, it doesn't become a privilege for the upper class to have emissions, you know, CO2 emissions.
It's really one of the challenges that we are facing. One of the things that we see today in tourism, that some cities are daring to take bold choices to go for less tourism. Mm. We talked previous the recordings about Amsterdam, for instance. Mm. Is that the way of the future?
I think it is in some places. I would almost say many places, because tourism is back now. We are more or less on the level that we were in 2019. That means we're going to see some of the same problems, and perhaps even more so, because our awareness of mass tourism as sometimes being invasive in nature is much greater than it was after 3 years of COVID, where cities belong to the residents again, mm-hmm. For good and for bad. So I think we're going to see some of the same problems again, and this problem that you're talking about is going to come back. Mm-hmm. And we also see more and more destinations capping tourism and discussing the carrying capacity of the destination. And that can have many forms. It can be specific days of the year. It can be specific places where nature is really sensitive, like in Thailand, the specific beaches or specific feasting areas for bears in the Rocky Mountains or whatever. So keeping tourists away from that. It can also be specific streets where there's too much traffic and noise. Or it can be entire destinations, like Dubrovnik, for instance. they regulated cruise tourism really, really hard because they were being flooded with cruise tourists. They could have up to 15,000 tourists a day in Dubrovnik coming with cruise ships. And so they regulated, now they're down to 4 max 4, from 15 to 4,000. And that is a super bold decision. And not everybody agreed with that in Dubrovnik, but now they see a much healthier tourism, and also that local businesses are really benefiting much more from that, because it also, there was this crowding out effect that nobody really could stay in Dubrovnik on those days.
Mm-hmm. Will tourism ever be sustainable, in your belief?
I think there are a lot of sustainable things about tourism. It's not black and white. It's not yes or no. There are things about tourism that I really love. I love that it brings prosperity sometimes, welfare, international relations, brings learnings. When people meet for big conventions, could be cardiologists or climate scientists, they meet somewhere around the world and they exchange results and latest research and stuff. That's beautiful. I also believe that tourism can bring, essentially tourism also moves consumption. So, and for good and for bad. And that can sometimes be fantastic. That you can help, grow isolated communities that are suffering from this and that, or they have very low income, can bring income to poorer communities. But it can also be very, very bad. And sometimes it is really invasive, and it's destroying natural habitat and stuff. And of course, we have to regulate. Mm-hmm. But that's the picture. I think it's very mixed. It's
very
a wonderful
mixed.
Sector in a way, and it can be strategic in many ways. It can also sustain cultures. It can add social resources to a place. But more often, I think, we also see the opposite,
mm-hmm.
That it can really consume places.
Totally.
And people.
So what I learned from this episode, Peter, and we need to end it because we are going over time, but what I learned from this episode is that we can make better choices to take better care of people and planet, but we need to dare to take those bold choices and really choose how we want to grow and with what paths and whatnot. Is that
I think it's very to the point. I think we need to take those bold choices, sometimes capping tourism, limiting tourism, taxing tourism, and making sure with the end goal, which we all share, and that's my sort of observation in many places, that in most destinations, people want the same. It doesn't appear that way often, but when you dive into it and have people working together in collaborative sessions over days, it often turns out that we all want the same. We love this place, and we want to make sure that it's a thriving place,
mm-hmm.
in the end.
Okay, thank you so much, Amai. Thank you so very much, Peter. This is it for now. There's a second episode coming up. Thank you very much, and take care.
Want to create lasting impact with your brand while feeding sustainable growth? Check out thecareprinciples.com and see how we can help you. 16 Minutes of Care is an independent production from Isabel Verstraeten, brand strategist, founder of The Care Principles, and author of the book, Does Your Brand Care? Help us reach more companies who are looking for caring and sustainable growth by giving this podcast all the stars it deserves and by sharing it in your network. Thank you, and take care.